Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.
Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I'm Josh and I'm joined by someone you might be familiar with, Carl.
Hi.
I think this is your Contemplations debut.
I think it is.
You obviously did the weekend podcast, which was what turned into Contemplations with Hugo, where you talked about the Great Reset quite a lot. But other than that, I don't think we've
had you as a guest. Yeah, it's time really, isn't it? But anyway, it's nice to be able to do this.
Yeah, so what we were going to talk about today is the science of dadism. And this is very much your thing. This is your kind of overarching philosophy.
As much as I loathe and despise science, if I can use it to my own ends to advance my agenda, then I'm going to.
Yeah. For those who don't know, we have an ongoing debate about blaming all of the world's ills on either philosophy, which is me, blaming it on the philosophers, and Carl blaming it on science. I'm of the opinion that, you know, science gives people the tools for the philosophers to do their evil deeds.
I mean, that's a fairly good synthesis, which means that we should get rid of the science.
And philosophy.
Possibly. return to just the fields.
Well, the trees in my case.
Yeah.
Debate for another day.
Yeah, that's your debate with Rory. Anyway.
Right, so on to dadism. If you could introduce everyone who is probably already familiar, but it's good to have a summary.
Yeah, well, basically, it's become deeply apparent that the feminist war on patriarchy has had some serious side effects and negative consequences. And I think it turns out that fathers, from the experience, my own experience of being a father, and from knowing people who didn't have fathers in their own households and how their lives are and how they are personally, it turns out that I think that human beings might have a sort of innate need for fathers, as well as mothers, no doubt, you know, but we're not having a motherlessness shortage. But I think the shortage of fathers has had real negative consequences for many millions of people, and we need to start rethinking this.
I think the evidence certainly bears that out.
It's overwhelming, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And of course, I'm not a father, as far as I'm aware. I'm going to be talking mainly from my position as a psychologist, although I have met children before. I know what they're like.
Used to be a child?
Yeah, once upon a time. Yeah. So they're not too unfamiliar to me. Obviously, family members have kids. I don't live under a rock. So they're not really that complicated, are they?
Well, they are, but you're kind of used to them because you're a human.
Yeah, you have an intuition.
About
it, yeah. So anyway, the first thing I wanted to get onto was a study which came out this year called The Long-Term Effects of Losing a Father in the US Civil War, which, of course, the US Civil War of 1861 to 65 is the deadliest conflict in US history. So one would imagine that there were lots of lost fathers in this war. So the research linked military records of 2.2 million Union Army soldiers to the 1860 census to identify soldiers who were fathers, first and foremost, and they tracked their sons into adulthood by linking them to the 1880 census. So it's just collating two different sets of census data together. The data consisted of 32,240 men in 1880 who were sons of Union Army soldiers, and 13.27% of whom lost their father during the war, which is quite a large proportion, really. Huge. 13%, obviously, that's going to be something that is large enough to actually just notice anecdotally, let alone just in their own lives. This meant that they observed more than 4,200 orphans, although their mothers were still around, it's just losing a father, between the ages of 0 to 20 in 1860, meaning they were between those ages in 1860, and then again when they were between the ages of 20 to 40 in 1880. So what this this comparison allowed them to do was it allowed them to study the effect of paternal deaths on the children's occupational income score. They also looked at things like geographic mobility and marriage decisions, but I'm not so much focusing on that. This is purely to illustrate the economic impact, because of course the traditional role of a father is to be the breadwinner, right?
Yep.
To bring in an income. And of course, if he disappears, or through dying in this case, this is going to have an impact. And
especially in the pre-social welfare era of 1880 to whatnot.
But what I'm trying to highlight here, obviously this is not as applicable to the modern day, but it's still, we're still human beings. It still operates under the same principles. It's not like fatherhood has necessarily changed. Human beings have stayed the same. Society's changed, but the dynamic is still more or less as it was.
Mm-hmm.
So the results showed a negative and persistent effect of paternal death on children's later life outcomes. So they even controlled for socioeconomic characteristics for both parents, as well as a wide range of military controls. So, for example, obviously, where you were, which regiments you were in, where you were in the war, all these sorts of factors are important to determine how likely you were to die. So there may be certain characteristics of these kind of selection pressures that might change the results. So through controlling that, they're kind of minimizing the risk of outside factors, providing a better explanation. So losing a father in the war decreased a son's occupational income score in 1880 by 4% of a standard deviation. So first of all, what's a standard deviation? Standard deviation is the square root of variance, which is determined by deviation of each data point from the mean. So what does that mean?
Yeah.
So the mean is obviously the average. So if you added up everything and then averaged it to the point directly in the middle, and a standard deviation is a set point
outside of that. So it's 8% spread around the mean.
Yeah.
So that's quite significant.
Yes, it is. And we'll actually find that wages dropped as a result of this, which corresponds to a lifetime loss of earnings of more than a year of work, which is quite significant, really.
Yeah.
But which in aggregate meant that the cost of the war in opportunity was the equivalent of $112 million in 1860 value for all of the sons who lost a father. Or in 2019's dollar value, this corresponds to a loss of about $3.2 billion, which is massive.
Yeah,
and I know it's a little bit crass to view it purely in economic terms,
but that's the kind of analysis you're giving as well.
Yes.
So it's fine, because it's not the only thing that's important. But you can see the actual economic costs of the war have a knock-on effect for generations.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's not just pointing out
the casualties of war aren't just the men who fight, but their
and
families.
The immediate
as well.
Loss that they have in the fact they can't earn money for their families and the damage to the economy that does. This has a knock-on effect for generations onwards.
Absolutely, yeah. And they found that the effect was actually largely concentrated in the middle of the kind of skill distribution. So this was mainly people who were in semi-skilled or who had fathers who were in semi-skilled professions, should I say, and their sons had more downward mobility. If you were already relatively low-skilled, your son wouldn't necessarily suffer as much because you had less to lose in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, and we're not talking about people who are in the upper middle class getting knocked down to the middle class.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about people who are the aspiring sort of middle class who got knocked down into the working class.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
So as father's wealth is a significant mitigating factor, no negative effects were found in the top quartile of wealth distribution. So those who are in the top quarter...
no problem at all.
Yeah, no problem, because they had the ability to kind of finance themselves without their father necessarily being there. And no link between a father's age was found in this, which I think is very interesting. It says a lot about things like social mobility in particular, which you brought up, where, of course, if you want to aspire to more and be better than your parents in an economic sense, then that's going to be very difficult if your father is not there to help you out financially.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that I think most people are aware of, but I think having the hard data to back it up.
It's not taken seriously enough, is it? That's the thing. Because this is one of the things that, if dare I talk about some of the philosophy about this. This is one of the things that Thomas Sowell keeps pointing out. It's, like, it's all well and good like pointing out these statistics, but like the real like worldview of the young men in, particularly say in the black community in America, because in Thomas Sowell's view, it is social welfare that has facilitated the destruction of this. And you can actually look into what the critical race theorists have said about this, writing in opposition to various, I guess we'll call them conservative just for the sake of brevity, conservative black and white thinkers talking about this, saying, well, look, this is more than just like, you know, you saying racism. This, from the individual perspective of the young man who's growing up without the father, he's missing the good example. He's lacking like the needed financial resources to get the education or the tools or the training or whatever it is to get the thing. But it's also the motivation to do something. Because like a lot of the time your dad pushing you, no, better yourself, better yourself, better yourself. It's hard to quantify, but on an individual basis, day by day by day, it builds up and it is important. You know, it's a really meaningful factor.
I do actually have some research to vindicate that, but my anecdotal experience is obviously the same as well. Just knowing that having someone there to push you and form guide a positive like relationship with and be a positive role model, that's obviously very important, because most people direct their own actions based on the actions which they see other people doing. And
for the approval of people. If there's someone whose opinion you value very highly, as all sons value their father's opinion very, very highly, then they're always looking for your approval. And I see it in my own sons. You know, if I come home and my son's been naughty, he'll be running around, then he'll see me and be like, oh no. And then suddenly he'll kind of deflate a little bit. I'm like, were you good today? And he'll be like, I'm like, Daniel. I said, no, I wasn't. But if he was good, he's joyous and he's running around. Yeah, I've been really good today, blah, blah. And then you can see the need for approval in young boys and young men. You can see it. And without this, take that away. I can only imagine how enervating it is for them. You know, it's like,
I would go so far as to say that when I was in education, The main driving force was my parents' high expectations.
Yeah.
They, I didn't really enjoy being in school, and just through putting up with it and being a bit of a miscreant otherwise, but taking my academic work seriously, I got a good result at the end of it, and that was purely because they set high standards which I wanted to live up to, because I didn't want to disappoint them. That was probably the most important thing in my mind.
And I've obviously taken that away. You wouldn't be where you are now. You wouldn't have the qualifications that you have now.
I certainly wouldn't be in this chair, I don't think.
Well, there we go, you know. So your life could have been way better. No, I'm just but that's exactly the point, though, isn't it? There is tangible, demonstrable benefits to having your father around.
You know? Absolutely, yeah.
It's just the way of life. Everyone knows this on an instinctive level. But, you know, apparently we need to use science to prove what mankind has known since before Aristotle. You know, like, no one's ever debated this up until, like, right now, you know, when it's like, right, look what happens when you take them away. Oh, it was bad. You know,
well, the perk is that now there's a need for it. We're actually going to probably know about it in more detail than we would otherwise. And of course, I'm going through the data to back up anecdotal experiences, but I don't want to kind of dehumanize things because there's a tendency to go through research and you kind of forget that it's human beings you're talking about. And of course, that's why I'm trying to kind of interlace the cold hard data with these sorts of things.
I mean, that's part of the core concerns of my anti-science action, to be honest. But anyway, let's
science is backing you up. It's just, you got to just find the right science.
Exactly, like every other scientist. I just have to find the science I like and agrees with me.
That's the problem, though, with like the media's perception. They just talk about science just like everyone's in agreement, when most of the time
there is never any agreement.
If you ever follow any academia, like the academic fights, they're brutal. This analysis is worthless.
Yeah.
You need to think about your career in academia in the future if you're going to continue publishing stuff like this.
It's very human. You know, this is one of the things that was it Michael Shermer who ran Skeptic magazine, I think it was. There was a controversy a few years ago with him and a bunch of social justice warriors, because he was like, well, science is, you know, it's meant to be neutral and objective and done in a professional way. And the social justice warriors just turned around and said, no, we're not neutral and objective, and we're not going to do science that way. And he was like, okay, that's concerning. And it's like, yeah, but like science was at least done with a view to trying to be impartial mm-hmm. and to be the sort of person who follows the data, right? But they became self-aware and wide awake, and they were like, no, we're going to use this to do what we want with it rather than actually trying to commit to the scientific method. And so it's like, right, okay.
I think you've touched on something important there, because I think people forget that science isn't just conducting research. It's following a methodology. Science isn't just a field, it is a practice. Yeah,
it's not an end result.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've recently studied the philosophy of science, actually, and Thomas Kuhn's
structure. Very familiar.
Yeah, scientific revolutions. I think this is the most probably damning thing that you can give to any scientist. It's like, look, whoever the people at the margins are, and who are like, you know, clinging on to this unpopular theory mm-hmm. at the moment, you need to start taking those people seriously. Because in 5 years' time or 10 years' time, other people will have taken them seriously. And then whatever was true about what they were saying, and there's bound to be something true about that. You just don't like it because it's an inconvenient data point where you've got this lovely set. Look at all this. It's all connected sensibly, except for this one thing that doesn't make sense. That means that your paradigm is wrong. And mm-hmm. at some point, someone will figure out why. All of, you know, you've got a bunch of true things, but they've got something true too, and someone will figure out how these are connected, and then your paradigm will be overthrown completely, and then the new paradigm will come in and you'll be looked at as a relic. So you can save yourself that hassle by just accepting, okay, that is a true thing, we can't explain it, we do need to explain it, we can't just get rid of it.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.